Stay tuned for Nightline Africa, coming up right after these latest world news headlines.
I'm Michael Brown reporting. French authorities took a hard line Saturday on what presidential frontrunner Emmanuel Macron called a massive hacking attack on his campaign, warning on the eve of the vote that anyone spreading the information could be committing a crime. Macron's team is blasting the leak against his campaign after a flood of internal documents were released online late Friday. British Prime Minister Theresa May is appealing to voters to give her a mandate to take into the Brexit negotiations. Speaking on the campaign trail Saturday, May said only a vote for her and her ruling Conservative Party and Britain's general election on June 8th would ensure that Britain had the strong and stable leadership it needed to get the best deal for Britain from Brexit.
I need a strong negotiating hand, because when it comes to the choice at the general election, people must remember this, there'll be 27 other European countries on one side of the table and only one person there to stand up for the UK. And the question at the general election is who will give that strong and stable leadership, me or Jeremy Corbyn?
Although the Conservatives gained more than 500 councillors in the Thursday general election, local elections that is, May insisted she was taking nothing for granted. Labour Party leader Jeremy Corbyn called Thursday's results disappointing and said there were huge challenges leading up to the June 8th vote.
This election isn't about Brexit itself. That issue was the subject of the referendum. This question is now, what sort of Brexit do we want? And what sort of country do we want to be in the future? And who can really be trusted to put working people first?
This is VOA News. A deal worked out by Russia, Turkey, and Iran to set up de-escalation zones in mostly opposition-held parts of Syria went into effect earlier today. Russia says the zones will be closed to aircraft from the U.S.-led coalition. Russia, Turkey, and Iran agreed to a Moscow-proposed deal to establish the so-called de-escalation zones. A U.S. Senate committee investigating allegations that Russia interfered in recent U.S. elections has ordered several of President Trump's former aides to turn over information about possible ties with Russia. One of those being scrutinized, Carter Page, who was a former foreign policy advisor to Mr. Trump, lashed out at the Senate Intelligence Committee in a letter made public calling the probe a fake inquiry. Both the Senate and House of Representatives intelligence committees, along with federal investigation officials, are looking into Russian efforts to influence the 2016 U.S. presidential election. Several national U.S. television outlets, ABC, CBS, NBC, and CNN, have refused to air advertisements from President Trump touting the accomplishments of his first 100 days in office. The paid ads featured nationally recognized television anchors with a fake news graphic superimposed on their faces. Trump has used the term fake news largely for any reporting that is critical of him and his administration. CNN and NBC said they would run the ad if the fake news graphic was removed. North Korea has accused the governments of the United States and South Korea of carrying out an unsuccessful assassination attempt against leader Kim Jong-un. State media reports quoted the country's security ministry as saying it would find and destroy the agents in the U.S. and South Korean spy organizations it accuses of plotting the attack. The North Koreans did not provide details about how it allegedly broke up the assassination plot or if anyone involved is in custody. Kenya's Eliud Kipchoge was 20 seconds from making history in the Italian marathon on Saturday, but the Olympic champion finished just short of becoming the first person to run a marathon in less than 2 hours.
I hope next time, I can say it's possible for a human to run under 2 hour mark. This journey has been good. It has been hard. It has taken actually 7 good months of preparation, of dedication, and of everything.
Kipchoge ran 26.2 miles of 42.2 kilometers in 2 hours, 26 seconds, beating Dennis Kamoto's world mark of 2 hours, 2 minutes, and 57 seconds. I'm Michael Brown reporting in Washington.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
Good evening and welcome to Nightline Africa. We are coming to you live from the English service of The Voice of America. Thanks for joining us. I'm Peter Clotty in Washington.
There is the whole issue of fake news, of attempts perhaps from the outside, perhaps from the inside, but we simply don't know who did it this time, of bad information being put out there to influence an election.
The campaign team of the leading French presidential candidate Emmanuel Macron is target of a hacking attack.
Let the president produce the evidence of the security institution that said that former minister was a security risk who had gone abroad to try and arrange undermining the government here.
A South African High Court demands explanation for President Jacob Zuma's sacking of former finance minister Pravin Gordhan.
Currently, the commission is exporting and transmitting this field data into a national server where further processes will be undertaken.
And the Sierra Leonean National Electoral Commission transmits data as it compiles a voter list for next year's elections. Those stories and more coming up on Nightline Africa. Official campaign ended Friday as France observes no political activity across the country Saturday ahead of Sunday's polls. This as French centrist frontrunner presidential candidate Emmanuel Macron's team said it has been the victim of a massive and coordinated hacking attack that led to the leak of campaign emails and financial documents. The hacking, the campaign said, is an attempt at, quote, democratic destabilization like that seen during the last presidential campaign in the United States. For an update on the French election, I reach VOA's Louise Ramirez in the capital, Paris.
Well, there's a very strict 24-hour rule that there's going to be absolutely no campaigning by any party within 24 hours of the actual vote counting, or the vote casting, I should say. Some people are praising that rule, especially in these hours before the voting begins, because it has been such an ugly campaign, probably France's most divisive, most contentious, since the founding of the Fifth Republic. We have the non-traditional parties now ruling the stage, the traditional parties having been excluded. The issues are very, very sensitive. Immigration, the economy, globalization. And certainly the dialogue between the candidates has been very acrimonious. And that came to light, especially in the debate that was held just a few days before the votes. It was a debate that was marked with personal insults, with very, very strong attacks that the people I've been talking to here in Paris are telling me that it left a very bad taste.
So today being a day of reflection, we understand Macron's 7,000 emails were released. Doesn't this have a semblance of what happened in the U.S. election recently?
Well, there is the whole issue of fake news, of attempts perhaps from the outside, perhaps from the inside. We simply don't know who did it this time. Of bad information being put out there to influence an election. And so what the French government now has done, there were emergency meetings, I can tell you, at the Interior Ministry on Friday night. And what the French government has ruled is that there is to be no publication. The media are under a very strong warning of very, very tough penalties if they release any of these documents. And the issue, officials say, is that it was a combination of legitimate emails and fake documents that are clearly a stamp of a well-organized campaign of disinformation meant to disrupt the outcome of the election. The latest poll heading into the election has Macron so far ahead of Marine Le Pen that it seems like a distant possibility, according to most observers who've been speaking on the subject. And so whether it has a real impact on the election at this late stage is going to be known on Sunday. I can tell you that polls indicate that unlike going into the first round, people going into the second round have made up their mind already. That is a big difference from the first round, in which a third of voters, just hours before the polls opened, had still not decided. Some made their decision right inside the polling booth. That doesn't appear to be the case going into this second and final round.
Can you speak to me about the possible role that African diaspora in France could play in this election?
What's been very interesting to see here, and I'm talking from a perspective not only in Paris, which is, of course, a very multicultural city with a very large African diaspora, but I'm also talking about areas of the countryside that I've been visiting in the last few weeks, places that are Marine Le Pen strongholds, like in Alsace, in Lorraine, but also in central France, which is largely a Macron stronghold. And the members of the diaspora have very, very diverse views, I should say. I can tell you that in Paris, the people who I've been speaking to and the polls show that overwhelmingly the African diaspora community is voting for Macron. There are concerns that, when Le Pen talks about curbing immigration and returning France to what it was, in her view, that they could also be affected, that they could also be targets. And, I hear things like being African, I could never vote for someone like Le Pen. But I did, in rallies in northeastern France, come across not one or two, but a number of people who were of African origin, who were French citizens voting, who are voting for Le Pen. When I asked them what their top issue was, security. Because as French citizens, they are affected by exactly the same issues that everybody else is, security and jobs. And those happen to be the two top issues underpinning this election. And so their views as diverse as the country of France itself.
That's VOA's Luis Ramirez covering the elections in France. He spoke with me from Paris. A South African High Court has asked President Jacob Zuma to provide records to explain the reasons why he sacked former Finance Minister Pravin Gordhan in a recent cabinet reshuffle. This after opposition Democratic Alliance Party petitioned the court seeking the president to provide intelligence which he used to fire the minister. But the ruling African National Congress, or ANC, rejected the court's ruling, saying the judiciary is pandering to the opposition party. Constitutional law expert Shadrach Gutu, Professor Emeritus at the University of South Africa, told me the case against President Zuma sets a legal precedent in South Africa.
The court action brought by an opposition party is to say, let the president produce the evidence of the security institution that said that former minister was a security risk who had gone abroad to try and arrange undermining the government here. And I think that is important, because if you are accused of plotting or undermining the government, that's a very serious crime, sedition or treason. And I think that the president has a responsibility to open up that to the public. Otherwise, the former minister would have the first right to be able to ask the president to do that.
Do you think the ANC is right by accusing the court of pandering to the opposition in ordering President Jacob Zuma to explain why he fired the former finance minister, Pravin Gordhan, knowing that the president has the constitutional mandate to hire and fire whomever he, under the circumstances, chooses to work with?
Well, my own view from a constitutional and legal point of view is that you can't have a leader with powers to appoint and remove cabinet ministers, deputy cabinet minister, people in various state enterprises every week and replace them with another. That is irrational. That shows that we are not a constitutional democracy where people are appointed on the basis of their ability to do the work and if they are going to be removed to do it properly. and not to do it in a shameful manner like the president did. I really hope that the courts will say the president has not presented any evidence and the president, therefore, is not trying to promote constitutional democracy and the principles under Section 1 of our Constitution, responsible, open, and credible.
The ANC has called on the presidency to appeal to the decision of the court. Do you foresee this going on? And in your legal view, do you think he has any chance of a possible success in his appeal?
Well, the president has every right under the Constitution, like every other person in the country, to appeal against a court ruling. That is why we have hierarchy within the court system in order to ensure that if you are gone through the lower courts, you have a right to appeal, and so that's written into the Constitution. But the courts will have to consider if you appeal, are there prospects of success? So there is a benchmark there that also gives the courts a discretion, but at the same time limits it so that they don't just say every case must go on appeal, because otherwise our courts will be so inundated with appeals, some of them frivolous and so on and so forth.
Do you think that the court, as the ANC is accusing it, is justified by ordering the president to explain his firing of the former finance minister?
Well, I think the court, all the court is asking for here, is there any evidence of what you claimed was happening? Because the president already gave reasons, and is that reason credible or not? Because if it is not, then we are dealing with a president who is lying to the public, indicating that the former minister, Gordhan, was, you know, really a danger to society, and that's why he called him and then removed him. We can't have such a precedent, because then it will keep the country never knowing what is within the law, within the Constitution, and what are fabricated. So it's a difficult case. It has not happened before, so it is going to set a precedent, but let us wait and see how that works out.
Shadrach Guto is Professor Emeritus at the University of South Africa. He spoke with me from the capital, Pretoria. The Sierra Leonean National Electoral Commission says it is transmitting data from across the country to the capital, Freetown. This, the commission says, forms part of the process to compile a voter list to be used for the elections next year. Albert Masekwe, spokesperson for the Electoral Commission, says the decision to extend the voter registration period has helped the electoral body to register more citizens. But the opposition says the extension, which was backed by Parliament, could be used to rig the vote for the ruling party in the polls. For the latest development of the voter registration process, I reach Electoral Commission spokesperson Albert Masekwe.
The Commission has completed the field data capture of the voter registration exercise. It was a 42-day exercise because 2 additional weeks were added to the original or initial 28-day exercise. Currently, the Commission is exporting and transmitting this field data into a national server, where further processes will be undertaken, such as deduplicating and matching of this data in order to weed out or rather clean the data.
When do you expect a provisional register to be presented to prospective voters to check their names and ensure their biometric information is correct ahead of a final list to be produced for the elections?
Originally, according to the registration timeline, we have a 6-month period from the start of the data capture and the printing of the final voters register. But as we are going within this period, it was expected for the last 2 weeks of May to have been the period for the exhibition. Considering the fact that there was a 2-week extension, and the timeline for that will have to be shifted. But as we are talking currently, the staff of the commission, everybody's involved in the transmission of data so that we can be able to put all of this data. Eventually, we'll be able to do the exhibition.
When the parliament decided to extend the voter registration by a 2-week period, does that affect the calendar of the Electoral Commission in its process to organize the elections?
No, it is not going to affect the electoral calendar in its entirety. Because towards the end of the initial 28-day period for the voter registration, within the 6-month timeline for the registration period, the 2-week extension for the voter registration capture additional eligible voters would be captured within the 6-month period. So it can be within the period of the 6 months that has been set aside for the registration process.
SLPB, the main opposition party, has criticized the Electoral Commission and by extension Parliament for the extension, saying that this is what the ruling party APC wants to use to allow the Electoral Commission to rig the vote for the ruling party. And they said that the recent census showed a figure which the Electoral Commission want to attain in the voter register and that the people are not there. It was just made up. How do you react to their criticism?
The parliamentary debate, the Electoral Commission is oblivious of the fact that if there are concerns from stakeholders, whether it is from opposition party members or ruling party members, as long as they are concerned, we have the responsibility to look after them. Besides that, there was a parliamentary debate, and both parties, the opposition and the ruling party, they are in parliament, and it was an extensive parliamentary debate, which actually gave rise. And being that the issue came from parliament, and parliament is the people's representative, the commission thought it fit that the extension was necessary. And looking at the figures, after the close of the initial period, when the extension took effect, additionally, the commission was able to register more people. So that's actually more or less, you can say, substantiated the fact that there was a need for addition of the timeline so that more people can be registered. When we look at the electoral process, the commission does not in any way intend to disenfranchise any political participation. So if there was need then for the extension, and even when the time was the period was extended, a lot of other Fayalunians who did not have the opportunity then were captured in the extended period time.
Albert Masokwe is the spokesperson for the Sierra Leonean National Electoral Commission. He spoke with me from Freetown. Last week, a delegation from Defend Defenders, or East and Horn of Africa Human Rights Defenders Project, and Refugee International was in Washington, D.C. This to raise awareness of the grave human rights and humanitarian crisis plaguing the Eastern Horn of Africa that has resulted in ever-increasing refugee flows. The group also received the Richard C. Holbrook Leadership Award at Refugee International's annual gala in Washington. Hassan Shirey is the Executive Director, East and Horn of Africa Human Rights Defenders Project. He dropped by our studios where my colleague Douglas Impuga began by asking him about the organization's major challenges.
In this sub-region of the East Africa and the Horn of Africa and Great Lakes region, the countries teaming up there are one of the most precarious countries in the entire continent. Members of that are collapsed states like Somalia, and nearly collapsing like South Sudan and Burundi and other fragile states, because a single issue like election dispute in one of the most stable countries like in Kenya could have brought, and we have witnessed that in 2007, the devastating impact on the cohesion of the society. So what we are talking about is that there's a dire need for the leaders of the sub-region to pool efforts together, the way West Africans have done it. Before full-blown out, states could collapse or societies could even kill each other. The other thing is that we are seeing now a larger number, as a result of those instabilities, of forced population movement, whereby people have been uprooted from their districts, villages, homes, helmets, everywhere, and now as I speak to you, another refugee camp has been established in northern Uganda, which is now overtaken. The one in Kenya, Dadaab, and the one even in Syria. It became now the largest refugee camp in the world.
This is a tough neighborhood. Some governments are led by military guys who became politicians. Some of them have changed their constitutions. Does that make your work harder?
Obviously, you see, each and every country, they have their own political systems to elect or select their own leader. But the concern has been more on the pattern of human rights violations, so before and during and after the elections as well. So those patterns now are becoming more consistent because there's an attack on what we call it right to protest, freedom of expression, assembly and association throughout the sub-region. And then that resultant is that the conscious spirits or human rights activists and defenders are the first to suffer the brunt of the current leaders.
Would you agree with some observers who are pointing out that in that region, abuse of human rights is getting worse?
Absolutely. All the statistics pointed out, Tanzania, which used to enjoy a relativity of freedom now, has dropped it to the indices of the state violators to number 12, the lowest ever recorded. And other countries, there have been Ethiopia, Eritrea, Somalia, those are the graveyards and the dark holes of the freedom workers in the world. So you could imagine now countries which were even stable now, they are becoming now violators of the press in their own context.
Do you see a correlation between good governance and democracy vis-a-vis human rights respect for human rights?
Absolutely. I just came from the capital meet foreign relations committee. Members of that committee, the discussion is that you cannot separate human rights, respect for rule of law, and democratic governance. And again, it has been linked that for development, the country. So all these are interlinkages: governance, humanitarian relief, development, and human rights. All of them, they are interlinked, and no one can separate it. And we have to address it that holistically the way it is.
Hassan Shire is the Executive Director, East and Horn of Africa Human Rights Defenders Project. He spoke with my colleague Douglas Mpuga from Washington. Many people who are disabled or have a condition that limits their ability to exercise might someday benefit from an exercise pill. A compound is being studied that gives people the benefits of exercise without having to work out. Viewer's Jessica Berman reports.
The compound, called GW1516, or simply GW, has been around for the past 20 years, and scientists say it's been used illegally by some athletes to improve their performance. Researchers at the Salk Institute in La Jolla, California, have a different goal in mind, helping people who are physically unable to exercise due to a health condition. The compound has the potential to give them the healthful benefits of exercise without actually having to work out. Michael Downs is a senior author of a paper published in Cell Metabolism that described how GW benefited mice in the lab.
And what we've shown is that you don't have to train to do that with this drug because it engineers the body so that you're making maximum use of your muscles that you have. And you're maxing out as far as you can with your muscle the endurance that you can do.
To confirm and better understand the physical endurance pathway, researchers genetically engineered mice to have permanently activated PPAR-delta, a gene that switches on the pathway. Instead of burning glucose for energy, which is normal for couch potatoes, the mice burned fat to fuel their muscles, similar to what's seen in marathon runners. Then researchers gave normal mice the compound GW, activating the same endurance pathway. Down says those mice were able to run 70% farther on a treadmill than untreated mice before becoming exhausted, what athletes call hitting the wall. Weiwei Fan, the study's lead author, says GW improves and repairs the structure of weak muscles. Fan says researchers believe it could do the same thing in people who are sedentary, even if they do not work out.
The reason our lab is interested in this field, exercise-induced health benefit, is because we want to develop something for people that are not able to exercise.
Researchers say drug companies have expressed an interest in the compound, which could be turned into a pill that could improve fat burning and muscle strength in obese individuals and those who suffer from conditions like type 2 diabetes or muscular dystrophy. Jessica Berman, VOA News, Washington.
You are listening to Nightline Africa on the English service of The Voice of America. I'm your host, Peter Clotte, in Washington, D.C. Coming up in the second half of Nightline Africa, the Saturday music spot from our collection of music from the continent. And it's time for music from our African collection.
All my people get down, get down on it. Everybody get down, yeah, get down on it. All my people get down, get down on it. Everybody get down, yeah, get down on it. This song is very funny. Back then me, I broke, nobody used to love me, yeah. Nobody respect me, they say me, I'm nothing. But just no hesitating, I got my mind pressing. Every day me paper chasing. The people say me, I'm jonesing. Right now, me and my people, we are balling, yeah. We are go to the club every day and nights, we popping. Everybody clubbing, the people, them are jumping, yeah. Oh, na, na. Yeah, yeah. Now, because I'm making money, the people say I joined Illuminati, yeah. But I really don't know. Now, because I'm making money, the people say I joined Illuminati, yeah. Well, I don't know what to say. Everybody get down. Everybody get down on it. Everybody get down. Get down on it. All my people get down. Get down on it. Everybody get down. Yeah. Get down. Yeah. Say, say. All I want is success. Yeah, yeah. I'm not here to impress. I'm not here to oppress. Yeah, yeah. Sometimes I ask myself, I wonder how I got this far. I'm missing, boy, nobody used to care after. Sometimes I ask myself, I wonder how I got this far. I'm the same person, nobody care about. Yeah. Right now I'm making money. Them send me a joint Illuminati. Yeah. I don't know. Now I'm making money, they say me a joint Illuminati, yeah. I really don't know. All my people get down on it. Everybody get down on it. All my people get down on it. Everybody get down on it. Money, MC me a joint Illuminati, yeah. I don't know. Hey, right now I'm making money, then say me a joint Illuminati, yeah. I really don't know. All my people get down on it. Everybody get down on it. All my people get down on it. Everybody get down. All my people get down. Everybody get down.
useless.
Is doing go kill somebody in this place?
Ah! Look, what's this?
All want to jump, boy, you want cause problem. fly to karate. Hey, I'm holding a Bugatti. Hey, I go buy you Ferrari. You don't get any choice but to marry. Hey, I go give you the khaki. Hey, you be calling me daddy. Come on to Tampa. Je m'appelle Wande Ko. Je vais danser avec toi. Faut danser avec moi. Yeah.
I say you like Lukumba.
Oh yeah, that's I'm like a willow Lukumba.
I know say you like Lukumba.
Oh yeah, that's I'm like a willow Lukumba. Hey, in love, cause she got me falling in love.
Original Gobe,
see me see what I like.
Johnny, leave me follow Cynthia. And I
Everybody come, make you follow me, go. Make you follow me, they feel the rhythm. Say, you know I'm capable, oh. I am capable in every season. Make you dance and feel the flow. Make you drink and party with me. When the body don't start to play, say, you know I'm the melody key.
And anything you need, I got ya. And don't be. You got, I got the answer.
What you feeling inside you, you got to let me know. Say what I'm feeling inside me, I got to let it show. And you know, when they see apa, I know they see nothing. And you know, when they see apa, I know they see person. I want you to dance, go. Yeah, I want you to dance, go. Yeah, I want you to move slow, low, low.
We want to run down. Now when the sun is done, gone down. But this place nothing like gone down. The intention not to paint the town brown. Salad class, the hobby one chill. Anybody come come for here, they know the drill. Hey, oh yeah, make you chill. For real.
I'm not a jolly, nine matter.
And don't do be, oh yeah, ma.
So don't be scared, baby. Come closer.
Cause I don't bite, plus any question you got, I got the answer.
What you feeling inside you, you got to let me know. Say what I'm feeling inside me, I got to let it show. And you know, when do viapa, I know they see nothing. And you know, when I see apa, I know they see person.
Hey, hey.
I want you to dance, go. Yeah, hey, I want you to dance, go. Yeah. I want you to move slow, low, low.
Asking for more, you don't need any reason. Just follow the beating. This here ain't no prison, so follow my leading.
Inside you, you got to let me know. Say what I'm feeling inside me, I got to let it show. And you know, when they see apa, I know they see nothing. And you know, when they see apa, I know they see person.
Oh, I'm making a dance, go.
Oh,
Music from the continent, we hope you enjoyed it. Nightline Africa comes to you on Saturdays and Sundays at 16 and 18 hours UTC from the English service of The Voice of America. And from the rest of the Nightline team, managing editor Shaka Sally, reporter Douglas Impuga, producer Odette Frazier, and our engineer for today, Justin Thwaite, we say a big thank you for joining us tonight. And remember, as the elders say, it is good to give the monkey a cup of water, but who will collect the cup from him? I'm your host, Peter Clotte in Washington. Good evening, Africa.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
In Ethiopia, progress in fighting malaria has contributed to the remarkable reduction in overall mortality among children under five, wrote Peter Vrooman, U.S. Chargé d'Affaires in Ethiopia. In an op-ed entitled Ending Malaria for Good is a Sound Investment, Mr. Vrooman noted that global progress in the fight against malaria since 2000 has been truly historic, and the U.S. government has played a key role in this progress. The World Health Organization estimates that more than 6.8 million malaria deaths were averted worldwide between 2001 and 2015, primarily among children under 5 years of age in sub-Saharan Africa. Despite this progress, he warned, around the world a child dies every 2 minutes from malaria. More than 400,000 people will die from malaria this year, and the vast majority will be young children in sub-Saharan Africa. This region bears a disproportionate share of malaria's burden. In 2015, 90% of all malaria cases and 92% of malaria deaths occurred in the region. The U.S. government has been a leader in the fight against malaria, particularly through U.S. President's Malaria Initiative, or PMI, launched in 2005, Mr. Vrooman noted. The initiative operates in 19 countries across sub-Saharan Africa, including Ethiopia. The initiative is led by the U.S. Agency for International Development and implemented together with the U.S. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. Through PMI, hundreds of millions of people have benefited from protective measures and hundreds of millions more have been treated for malaria. In Ethiopia, PMI has procured about 20 million insecticide-treated bed nets, 9 million rapid diagnostic tests, and more than 15 million treatments to prevent malaria. PMI also trains healthcare workers to strengthen their capacity to fight the disease. Beyond improving child survival and maternal health, malaria control contributes substantially to eradicating extreme poverty and improving educational outcomes. Experts estimate a $60 return for every dollar investment in malaria prevention in the region. We must all join our efforts to end malaria in Ethiopia and worldwide once and for all, Mr. Vrooman concluded. Beating diseases like malaria is the right thing to do. It's also the smart thing to do.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.